Linoleum knife.
You're so amused by that.
Well, it's because you're such a stickler for me letting the song run all the way out.
Well, you know, it's rude not to. It is rude to Blue,
a very talented musician who
gave us that song.
No, it's not. It's creative license. I'm an artist.
Uh-huh.
I think everyone understands that.
Mm-hmm. So you're making a commentary by cutting it off while the last note is still playing?
I'm just going with my feeling.
You're a vandal, is what you are.
Going with my feeling. I've got a lot of feelings. I go with them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
this is Linoleum Knife.
This is Linoleum Knife, and I want it to be over already.
Welcome to any new listeners who might have read about us on PCMag.com, which called us one of 41 podcasts you should be listening to.
What kind of number is that?
I don't know. Look, when I worked in magazines, they always said prime numbers caught people's attention more. That's why it's always 101
hot
hair
tips. Why not 31?
They came up with 41.
Why not 37?
You know what? Maybe we
were not 29.
Maybe we were number 41, and so we're lucky they had that many. Is what
were,
I'm saying.
Were we number 41?
If they weren't ranked numerically.
How were they ranked?
They were divided into categories.
By weight?
Yes.
Like collective weight?
We were ultra fatty. No, it was divided into categories. It was like politics and culture and fandom and how-to and whatnot.
Huh. Were there any other movie podcasts on there?
I don't think so. I'd look again at the culture
page. What is
page.
PC Magazine? Politically correct magazine?
No, personal computer.
Oh. I don't know anything about either one of those subjects.
Yes, well. Anyway, don't look a rave mention in the mouth.
No, I'm not. I'm very grateful.
Yes.
That we were rave mentioned.
Thank you. You should be. Thank you, PC Mag.
I'm very happy. Yeah, no, I'm very happy that we were mentioned because we are the podcast that you should be listening to that you're not listening to. But if you're listening, then
you're already listening.
It doesn't. This doesn't apply to you
because you are anyway.
If you're new,
this is a podcast of the cinema.
Yeah, this is a podcast of the cinema, and my name is Dave White. I'm the film critic for Movies.com, mm-hmm. And my whole head and throat hurts today because of allergies and things in the air. And I woke up with a really gross sore throat. I don't know that it's making me sound any different than I normally sound, though. I'm hearing myself in my headphones. I think I sound stuffed up.
A little bit.
But I don't.
But not terribly.
Yeah.
It's not like a driving like that.
No. I had some NyQuil last night, so I'm kind of underwater today.
I see. Los Angeles is having.
You're going to win all the arguments, is what I'm trying to say.
I do anyway.
Because I'm just. I don't care.
Los Angeles is having a late autumn warm spurt, and so things are blooming. And
well, it was like cold. They blew the cold air at us, and now they're blowing the warm air at us, and now this is going away. The cold air is coming back now. Yeah.
Which is fascinating. But in any event, the result is that.
It's really important to me.
Dave White is having allergy head.
My favorite website, weather.gov, and I, we have a morning appointment. On the weather.
They let you down this week, though.
They did let me down.
They made promises that were not fulfilled, so that's what you get for trusting.
Anyway, I feel gross. Goodbye.
Stop it. Anyway, so he's film critic for Movies.com. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap and also a film critic for What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube.
Also, you're the author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
I am, which
it's very important that we start talking about
that.
It's
relevant again.
It's a book you need.
It is.
It's a book that came out in 2010, but you didn't know it. You were ignoring it, or maybe you missed the very large promotional push that took place. in that
it's
time.
Quite possible
you did a nationwide book tour.
It's true.
And you
sort of.
You were on the television.
Yep.
You were on TCM.
Mm-hmm.
You were on
History.
The History Channel.
Yeah.
What else were you on?
That's kind of Reels. I think interviewed me.
You were on Reels.
Yes. So yeah.
So yeah, it was like it was major. And if you missed it,
even by book standards, it wasn't even that major. But anyway, it is I think a book that people like, and that if you don't already have it in your library, perhaps you ought to. If you like movies, if you like Christmas, if you like.
You don't
Christmas
sell
movies.
Things very well. Well, you're really sort of low-key about it.
Because it's gross to just do my own stuff that way.
Well, then shut up and let me do it.
Have at it.
Buy that book. Damn it. It's Christmas. Effing Christmas book. This is a clean podcast, by the way.
Yes.
You won't hear me swears.
That's what else we have to review this week.
Yeah, what?
A Merry Friggin' Christmas.
Well, start talking about that then, because we'll get it over with in like 60 seconds. I saw, like, bits and chunks uh-huh. as you were watching it on the TV, mm-hmm. and I just was, no.
In the immortal words
Matt was right. This is a defective film somehow.
In the immortal words of Joel Hodgson, it stinks. Mm. Sadly, it is one of the last of Robin Williams' movies, and not a very good one.
Let me know if my coughing into the microphone is a problem.
Well, just don't do it while I'm talking.
Yeah, I'm just trying. Okay.
Anyway, yeah, so it stars Joel McHale and Lauren Graham, who are both funny and talented people.
Yes.
Saddled with a script that is not funny and not talented. Joel McHale is a guy who had Christmas ruined for him as a kid by his dad, Robin Williams, who spilled the beans about Santa when he was like 5 years old. And so in doing everything he can to be the opposite kind of parent, he has gone out of his way to make sure that his own young son believes in Santa as long as possible. Through ridiculous contrivances, McHale and his family wind up going home to spend Christmas for the first time in years with Robin Williams and Candace Bergen, who play his parents, and his siblings are Wendy McClendon Covey, who is married to Tim Heidecker in this movie, and Clark Duke. And they drive all the way from Chicago to Wisconsin, which is completely snow-free, with everybody saying, oh gosh, global warming, it's the warmest December on record.
They really shot it in, like,
July in Georgia. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then there's, you know, family friction, and then McHale realizes that he's left his kids' Christmas presents back home in Chicago, so he's got to drive back and get them.
Why couldn't they just live in Georgia?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Where Christmas is sometimes warm.
Because then it couldn't be called a Merry Friggin' Christmas, because there's this sort of lightweight strain of Midwestern euphemism humor running through the movie.
I see.
Very, very lightweight.
Got
now,
it.
Look, I literally wrote the book on Christmas movies.
You did.
And I
buy
love
it. It costs $20.
If you buy it from us.
If you buy it on the internet, it's cheaper. Like, significantly cheaper. But
you won't get it signed.
You're going to get it a whole. We'll tell you about the very special way you're going to get it.
That's right.
At the end of this.
If you buy it directly from us.
Show.
Anyway, I love a dysfunctional family Christmas movie. I love a dark comic Christmas movie. I love a movie that is subversive of the sort of cliches of the holiday movie. But this movie is not that. It is not smart enough to be subversive or to have anything to say about really Christmas or about dysfunctional families. All the resolutions are really pat and tidy. All of the sort of outrageousness is really lazy and low-key. This is two steps away from being a Hallmark movie. I mean, it's really not as keyed up and as subversive as it thinks it is.
Wouldn't it be cool if Tim Heidecker were really in a Hallmark movie?
Oh, it'll happen one day.
I always think of him, whenever I see him in a movie, unless it's that one that I can't remember the title of now that was serious that I'm blanking.
Oh, about. The where he plays the jerk guy.
Yeah. I always think it's a stunt when he's in a regular movie.
Right.
Because I expect the screen to start folding in upon itself and making that kind of noise.
He takes the work, you know.
Yeah.
He's in Bridesmaids and says not one word, which I think is great because it's a movie about the women.
Right.
And I guess I guess he and Wendy McClendon Covey hit it off because now they're playing spouses in this movie. But they don't give him anything funny to do, even in a non-Tim and Eric kind of way. There's just his part is a sort of, as I've said in my review on The Wrap, a diluted eggnog version of Randy Quaid in the Vacation movies.
Got it.
So yeah, it stinks. Don't waste your time with it. It's available on demand. The soundtrack is okay. It's got people like Rufus Wainwright and Ben Queller on it, but the movie is junk.
Here's the thing about parents ruining Christmas. My dad was a bit of a disaster, like in real life.
Generally speaking.
Yeah. But when we were little kids, he turned it out for Christmas. Like, he went into debt. He bought so many presents. We were not, like, rich at all, but we got more toys at Christmas than you could even believe. It was nuts.
Was that like the one day a year he would sort of make up for everything else?
Was
that the
idea? No. Like, he was fine. Mm. You know, when you're a child, you don't understand that, like, maybe your entire family is a disaster. You know what I mean? Like, you just think that's how life is, and it seems okay. Like, there's nothing majorly horrible going on. Only then do you realize, you know, when all the terrible things that are actually going on. But no, Christmas was a delight. When I was like 4, 5, 6 years old, Santa came
with a full sack.
With a full bag of toys. Yeah, it was great. But not, you know, we didn't realize
at what cost.
We didn't realize at what cost. Yeah. Like that, he was digging us into a hole financially, and like, you know, insane debts. It was nuts.
Those thing makers don't grow on trees.
No, they don't. Well, you think they do when you're 5. You're like, yay, Santa brought me a thing maker. Look up thing maker.
Yeah.
If you're too young, kids, to remember what the thing maker was. So okay, we're done talking about this movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of Christmas,
yes,
you and I are going to go see the Kirk Cameron movie next Friday.
Yes,
it's called Saving Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
It is a war on Christmas movie.
Yes,
because as you know, there is this fake thing out in the world called the War on Christmas, where apparently, well, I'm sorry, in the minds of the people who believe in this fake thing called the War on Christmas,
nobody ever gets to have Christmas at all, at any time, anywhere.
Because of the liberals.
Yes.
The liberals are destroying Christmas intentionally to make everyone unhappy.
Right.
For no good reason.
Yes.
Because
they're easily offended.
Yeah. And so apparently we can't, no one's allowed to say Merry Christmas anymore, and no one's allowed to have Christmas anymore. And
trees.
So, yeah. Bill O'Reilly's really into it.
Yeah.
I watch him in December on the internet, not on TV, but on the internet. I watch the clips where he talks about the war, because he brings it up. Boy, he is ready.
Well, it's ratings gold for him, even though it's completely made up, which, of course, like everything else on the Fox News channel.
He is on the spot.
Like, and didn't the Fox News channel, like, didn't they send out a Happy Holidays card? Or
they did.
They've been caught being all Happy Holidays, even though he says that's the spawn of the devil. You know?
Right. So we're going to go see the Kirk Cameron movie next Friday when it opens at the Burbank Mall.
And go to the Dairy Queen.
Yeah, we're going to go use our lovely Dairy Queen gift card that...
From Mr. Kellogg.
From BJ Kellogg, who sent us that in the mail. Very excited. And, but to prep for this, we watched...
Last Ounce of Courage.
It's streaming on Netflix.
Yes, for free.
You should totally look at it.
It is. If you want...
Can you pause it for a minute? I'm going to have a big coffee.
Okay, sure. Okay, we're back. If you want an unfettered glimpse at the persecution complex being enjoyed by a certain brand of evangelical Christian in the modern day,
evangelical Christians,
check out Last Ounce of Courage, because this movie would have you believe that municipalities have been cowed into not even putting up a Christmas tree on the courthouse lawn. We're not talking a creche here. Like, it's not that, oh, you can't have a nativity scene. No, you can't have a tree.
Right.
And if you have one, Fred Williamson from the ACLU will pull it down with a truck and stomp on the ornaments.
With weird sort of...
Adobe After Effects.
Like floaty, flarish,
exploding
sort of
exploding
light special effects.
If you have ever listened to the Flophouse podcast, or even if you haven't, go check out their entire episode devoted to Last Ounce of Courage. They give it the skewering it deserves. But yeah, this movie is... crazy.
It's mostly really boring.
Well, yeah, and it's of course amateurishly done and terribly filmed.
Yeah, it's an incredibly badly made movie.
It does have one great laugh out loud moment, which is the premise of the movie is that this guy sends his son off to war and he dies.
Unnamed war.
Yeah, they're very vague about that. And then eventually the daughter-in-law and the dead guy's son move back in with the grandfather. And the grandson finds this last video that the dad had shot, you know, with his little camcorder before a battle. And when we finally get to see the whole thing... In the middle of the dad saying Merry Christmas, there's an explosion.
And he dies. Yeah.
Of course, leading to the question is then how did the camera survive and how did they get the tape?
Where did they get everything?
But it's so crazily...
It's great.
It's not even on the nose. It's like a combat boot crushing a nose.
Yeah. So, we did our homework.
Yes. So we're ready for Kirk Cameron. And his complete lack of understanding of how the modern... holiday of Christmas evolved from various pagan traditions that the Christian church glommed themselves onto to stay relevant, and the fact that many of the early settlers in this country banned the celebration of Christmas as an excuse for debauchery. So when people talk about what Christmas has quote-unquote always been, it's about roughly akin to when they talk about what marriage has always been. Which is to say they have no idea. So the big movie this week, of course, is Interstellar.
Yes.
The Christopher Nolan jam. Why don't you explain what actually happens in that movie?
In the future, the very near future, the Earth is dying because of us. It's a dust bowl, and it's subsistence farming, and it's all corn.
Well, do we know that it's our fault? There's talk about blight and stuff. I mean, they never
it's
come
our,
out...
It's our fault.
Well... But here's the thing, though.
It's happening right now, and it's our fault.
I understand that. But usually in a post-apocalyptic movie, they very much will connect the dots about, you know, global warming or industrialization or blah, blah, blah.
They don't mention global warming.
They keep it vague, I think.
But it's our fault. Anyway. Engineer, cowboy, astronaut, farmer... Matthew McConaughey, named Coop. It's a good name.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like being a farmer. But he has to be, because everybody has to be a farmer now. All of our dreams, all of our technology dreams, have been strangled out of existence.
Because we're starving.
The whole world is starving, so everyone's got to be a farmer. But then one day, in the room of his brilliant little daughter, played by a young actress named Mackenzie Foy, some dust of some sort falls into her room in a strange series of patterns, which she figures out are coordinates.
No, she thinks it's Morse code.
She thinks it's Morse. That's right. She thinks it's Morse code. And he figures out it's coordinates to a geographic location. Now, how did this dust fall? Well, she says it was a ghost, and he says it has to be science, but we don't know why. Gravity, they talk about gravity is the thing. But he follows the coordinates, and when he gets there, it's NASA. And
remains of NASA.
It's a shrunken NASA, yeah. They take him in, and they say, okay, dude, you're going out into space. Because here's what we did. We sent all these other people out into space to find new worlds that we could live on.
Because there's a wormhole that allows us to go into another dimension.
Collapses the time, and, you know, you can do it. You have to go find these dudes, see who was right. See which one landed on the right planet.
Because Earth is running out.
Also, here are your shipmates. Anne Hathaway.
who is the daughter of his mentor, Michael Caine.
Wes Bentley. And just as an aside, I always have a really nice feeling when I see Wes Bentley in a movie now.
That he bounced back.
That he's got... I mean, I don't have any special feelings for him as an actor.
No.
Like, it's not like I go, oh, I love a Wes Bentley film. I'm just glad he's not shooting up heroin anymore in a you know, a downtown motel somewhere.
Right. Because that was what he was doing?
That was what he was doing. Like, there are big articles and interviews with him where he's like, yeah, I was going to die. And I didn't have any money left. And everything was a disaster. And I was on heroin. And then he got himself pulled out. And now he's working again, which is great. But when he's, I like seeing him well. I like seeing anybody well.
Restored.
I'm not a fan of actor deterioration. Like, there was an article on the internet this week about Jan Michael Vincent.
Oh, I didn't
remember him.
Yeah, yeah.
Strongest man in the world. No, the world's greatest athlete. Yeah. Airwolf.
Mm-hmm.
He's like in his 70s now, and he's like lost a leg.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's like broken down.
Oh.
And you know, he's a mess. And he doesn't have any money, and it's very sad.
Yes.
You know, again, no actual feelings for him as an actor, just that he was an actor when I was a child in Disney films.
Right.
But, you know, his entire life has been thrown down a toilet somehow, and he lost a leg to something or other. That bugs me. I don't like seeing that
kind of
thing.
It's like watching Jeff Conaway on Celebrity Rehab.
Exactly. I don't like seeing that kind of thing. It makes me sad, you know. So anyway, Wes Bentley, Anne Hathaway, David Gyasi, who I don't really know much about.
Yeah, he's good. I don't know who he is.
And a robot, a really great robot.
Yeah.
That I dug. Tars, voiced by Bill Irwin.
Yes. Definitely one of the things I put in this movie's category is coming up with a way of showing robots that I've never thought of or seen before.
And they go into space. And I don't want to tell anybody what happens after that.
Obviously, we won't spoil anything. There is a whole... If you want all the spoilers, Bibbs and Matt Atchity and I did a super spoilery review on What the Flake. But you should not watch that until you have seen the movie.
Yeah. I give a little bit more away in my review for movies.com.
Mm-hmm.
But not, you know, only sort of obliquely.
Mm-hmm.
Like where I talk about... You know, they discover that there are extra dimensions.
Yeah.
And they think they have been called into space by beings from these extra dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they have to learn along the way is...
Who's
sending these messages? How they can work their way into these messages and these extra dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And what it all... is supposed to mean.
Right.
In the process, Christopher Nolan does what he did with Inception and sort of explodes everything out and then folds everything in and it becomes, at times, narratively challenging because you don't know why things are happening until this last act bit of really over-the-top emotionalism.
And that's where it all fell apart for me.
Begin saying your thing.
Again, it's hard to... I can't go into detail about why this movie annoyed me with
You're talking around it.
But being as oblique as possible, this movie... Okay, remember how annoyed we were with Flight? Because it seemed like it was setting up this really dark character study and that it was just... You know, the character was so terrible and, so, you know, his alcoholism was so out of control and stuff.
Yeah.
And then to suddenly have it all peachy cream at the end and he, like, you know, at the moment where he could have just, like, lied and had to live with the burden of the guilt of having lied. Instead, nope, then he decides he takes that moment to suddenly have this breakthrough and come clean and go to AA and all that stuff. This movie has a similar cheat in that it sets up these really complicated notions about space and time and the destiny of mankind and about personal sacrifice and about melancholy and loss and sadness. And then doesn't deliver on any of that and comes up with the most BS way to, like, get out of that story and get out of whatever... philosophical conundrums it might have had to deal with. There was a review I thought that was really good that said this is a movie for people who wanted to know where the hotel room was at the end of 2001 and what the thread count was of the sheets. Like, so I was really annoyed.
I find that uncharitable.
I was really annoyed by this movie because it took me to a place where I was like, wow, they're really grappling with big stuff here, and they're willing to go in a certain way. And then it's like, no, I had to remind myself that Christopher Nolan is not an art house director. He is a major studio director.
Yes.
And he is, even with the endless chits I'm sure he has,
yes,
with the as much
I'm he sure, gets to do just what he wants.
He gets to do what he wants. He's got all the creative control, but even in that context,
I mean, I'm guessing, but I'm assuming.
Of course he does.
He gets his way.
I'm sure he gets his way.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he waters down his own way in favor of mass appeal and commercialism as opposed to challenging an audience making art. And this movie, to me, feels fatally compromised in the third act. And it just annoyed the crap out of me. I will say, it's gorgeous to look at from start to finish. If you were going to see it anyway, spring for as big and as nice a screening, you know, as you can. If you got 70 IMAX in your area, pay extra for 70 IMAX. But this is a singularly frustrating movie. I think the writing is often... I liked the ideas more than I liked the dialogue. I think a lot of the dialogue is really clunky. I find a lot of the characterizations not very interesting. The performances are fine given the context of what they're running around having to do, but nobody really gets a moment to kind of display any great level of humanity. This is a very, very problematic and frustrating movie. And all the more so because it set me up for something that was going to be better and smarter and more difficult. Respond.
Wrong!
Go ahead, fanboy. Tell me about how Christopher Nolan can do no wrong.
Yeah, there's this weird thing now where suddenly this director...
Yes.
...has become like a lightning rod on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not anything that I participate in.
No.
I hear about it. I don't, you know, go to any of these.
Well, I get accusations of
sites
whatever
or pages, you know,
because of not, you know. Anyway.
And so it makes discussing him even more difficult.
Right.
Because people out there have decided to hang all their ideas and all their hopes on him.
And you're either with him or against him.
Yeah. I need you to pause again for a minute. I'm going to cough all over myself again. But what I really feel about him is that he is sort of an heir to Spielberg. And working within the framework of the big budget Hollywood film, he takes risks and he goes to strange places.
And this apparently was originally supposed to be something that the Nolans were writing for Spielberg.
I don't know anything about that. I don't pay attention to that kind of stuff. All the pre-release.
No, I know.
Chat. I don't care.
I avoid it too, but I just.
I like to talk about a finished film.
There's some stuff you can't get around,
right,
unfortunately.
So, and so in that context, I'm a fan of this guy. I like to see where he's going. I like to see him refine himself and yet still give a resolution. This movie has a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find that resolution too easy, I think that within that resolution, there is a lot of strangeness. And particularly when it comes to the female characters, which you, in your review on The Wrap, you called it out for what you thought was giving the female characters sort of the short end of the stick.
Yes.
When I believe, again, without trying to spoil too much, mm-hmm, I believe that it's the women in the film who are right about a lot of things and have to be listened to and who do a lot of the accomplishing. And so, and I can't say anything more than that.
I know.
That's
I want to get into this with you, but I can't.
In my review, I wrote that, you know, they enter a world where time and love are quantifiable. And I've already got people in the comments yelling at me for giving away the entire story. Because I say that they follow into, they go into these dimensions where time and love are quantifiable. And that's not giving anything away.
No.
You know, but I feel like the idea of human frailty and human inability to enact empathy and to truly love in a way that is demonstrable becomes, you know, mixed up with science in this movie, and it's a really cool way to think about human progress in a speculative way. I'm sure the science is completely dopey and wrong. I don't know science things because I was an English major. So,
and the science doesn't have to be right if it's in the service of this of a grander metaphor. I just didn't buy what you're saying. To me, it felt false and unearned. And I think that it also, it's not even just that it's an objectively lame way to end this movie, but it feels like a lame way to end this movie within the context of what this movie has laid out for you. And again, we'll talk about this.
I think it succeeds.
Yeah.
I was very happy.
I disagree. I think
I left feeling like I had been sort of, you know, not in a 2001 kind of way, because that's ambiguity.
That's art.
That's art, and that's ambiguity, and that's mystery. And this is art, but it is also resolved and unambiguous and confusing sometimes, but it requires you see it again.
I feel like this movie, not that it cheats on what it sets up, but it sets up something more challenging than we get. And I'll explain to you why.
I'll give you a little bit of that.
Yeah. But you know, I understand that people want to see it, and if you do see it, you should certainly like see it big and brassy. There's an issue now going on about like people saying that they thought the sound mix was messed up in their theater, but apparently no. That's the way that Nolan mixed it, and it is annoying the way he does it, because there are many conversations where people are talking and suddenly, whoa, like there's a pipe organ or a string section or something, and in my review,
and dialogue becomes difficult to understand.
Hear. Yeah. I joked that was the new blah.
But you know what? Even though there were moments where the dialogue was difficult to understand because of the noises all around them,
mm-hmm.
I kept going. I followed through what they were saying.
I could hear what they were saying, and it'd be...
I couldn't hear what they were saying. I just I felt like it because, you know, I'm half deaf.
I was going to say you,
but it'd
be one thing if you said, "Well, I'm going to drown them out with the ambient noise of the spaceship or the winds or whatever." But no, it's the score.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have problems with this movie, but you know, certainly it will be a film that people will be seeing and discussing, and you certainly should. But don't be surprised if you are also disappointed by it. I had a much better time with Big Hero 6.
Me too.
Which is the
not me too. I like Interstellar more than Big Hero 6, but I really like Big Hero 6.
Wrong. Big Hero 6 is way better.
It's delightful.
It is Disney, of course, owns Marvel now, and so this is them making
Training Wheels Marvel for children.
Exactly. This is my first Marvel movie. I'd never read the comic book that it's based on, and I went and read the Wikipedia page, and no, it's totally different. Tonally, and in a lot of ways.
Right.
But anyway, what they've come up with here I think is very charming, and I want to see more of these characters in other movies. I want to go back and see this in 3D, because they showed it to me flat.
They showed it to me flat, too.
And I suspect that it is visually gorgeous based on it. When I left, I remember thinking, wow, it's the rare 2D movie I wish they'd made in 3D. And people were like, no, it was in 3D.
It was in 3D.
Just didn't see it that way.
Right.
So it is about a kid named Hiro, whose name, H-I-R-O, who is apparently, I missed this, is half Japanese?
Yes.
I didn't get that point. I just thought he was Japanese. Anyway, living in San Francisco, and he is already graduated from high school, but is sort of spending his time in these underground robot fights. But his older brother convinces him that he needs to go to college, and he shows him that at college he's making all these amazing things, and that he's got all these friends who are working on cool inventions. Hiro comes up with a really cool invention as sort of his entrance exam, but there's a terrible explosion, and he has to get to the bottom of who was behind it with the help of his brother's friends from the university, and eventually they become a superhero team, aided greatly by his brother's plush inflatable healthcare robot named Baymax,
yes,
whom Hiro tries to re-outfit as a... as a kung fu kicking mecha tough guy,
Like a Gundam kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very sweet, and my only disappointment with the movie is that there are moments midway through where I thought, "Wow, this movie is really going to go off into its own place and not sort of follow the usual kids movie stuff." And then at some point, you can feel it kind of landing on the rails and riding the rails all the way through to the station. But it's fine. You know, that was it, I'm not going to knock it for not being as awesome as it could have been, because it's still terrific on its own.
Yeah, it does a lot of things similar to How to Train Your Dragon 2, where it offers up real issues, you know, darker kind of stuff,
sure,
and real threats,
mm-hmm,
that follow through. They don't pull back.
No, there are stakes.
And at the same time, even though they feel like they have to fight the bad guy at the end,
mm-hmm,
the ideas about who is the bad guy change. And ideas about...
what does a hero do?
Yeah. Is he just out for vengeance? Or is he, you know, actively working to do the right thing?
Right.
And so it's got that sort of the futility of vengeance sort of idea. Mm-hmm. And I said in my review that, you know, normally you got to grow up and watch Last House on the Left to get that message. But here it is in a children's film.
Yes.
So, this is the co-director directed the 2011 Winnie the Pooh.
The wonderful, wonderful Winnie the Pooh movie.
Which... yes. Is a beautiful film. If your kids have never seen the 2011 Winnie the Pooh, then your kids are having an abusive childhood.
You've deprived them.
And you're the one that's to blame. But the what I loved about this one is that there's kind of a shout out to that Winnie the Pooh. Not that particular Winnie the Pooh movie, but to the character of Winnie the Pooh, where Baymax gets stuck.
Oh, squeezing in the window.
Squeezing in a window. It was like, oh, that's what happened to Winnie the Pooh with the honey tree.
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, you're right.
So the...
This is it's bright and it's colorful, and, you know, it's a pro-science movie with a mixed gender and ethnic group of superheroes.
Yeah.
Take your kids.
It's really nice and sweet, and it's exciting and it's colorful. The animation is beautiful.
Even if you don't have kids, go see it. It's great. I'll tell you, if you can make a movie that's...
if you don't have kids, you don't need this movie.
No, if you can make a movie that's a superhero origin story and make it watchable, like that's a coup at this point.
There is also a post-credits...
stinger. Shawarma.
Little bump at the end, yeah.
But yeah, you should check this out. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So the... you saw... The Theory of Everything?
Yes.
When did you see that?
I saw it. They showed it to me back when, so that I could have a review running when the Toronto reviews ran.
Oh, all right. Now, I have not seen this. It's opening really limited.
This weekend, yeah. But it's spreading out, and it's definite awards bait action.
If it is, maybe I'll review it. Okay. You know, like if it opens really wide, maybe I'll review it.
Well, believe me, they are... this is considered like a best actor nomination lock, so
be ready
for that. Yes.
All right.
Eddie Redmayne stars as Stephen Hawking. Boom. You know, it's about Hawking falling in love with his wife when they were both students at Oxford, I believe, mm-hmm, in the early 60s.
Yeah.
And then his ultimate sort of... you know, his diagnosis with Lou Gehrig's disease and his loss of motor control.
Yes.
she suddenly finds herself not only raising their children, but also tending to him as well.
Yes.
They, you know, it's based on her memoir, so, you know, it's her side of the story.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the two performances are lovely. Eddie Redmayne plays Stephen Hawking. Felicity Jones plays his wife. And I've not been crazy about her, mainly because I haven't liked the movie she's been in.
What has she been in? Remind me.
Like Crazy?
Ugh.
Yes, that was her.
What else?
I don't remember. I just remember a couple things I did not particularly like.
All right.
They're lovely. And the movie has some nice things, you know, has some nice moments where they sort of wrestle Hawking's big ideas into small enough bites for idiots like me to understand what he's doing or, you know, what the point of his work is.
Oh, she's in Amazing Spider-Man too. Barton.
She is?
Yeah. Felicia. I don't know. I don't remember.
I suspect that's like a cameo that they're going to set her up to Black Cat later on.
Cheerful Weather for the Wedding, which I saw.
Didn't see it.
I'm like looking her up right
yes.
now. Yeah. Yeah, anyway, go on.
Anyway, the main problem with this movie is that, you know, Stephen Hawking, we're being shown this guy who completely made us reconsider our ideas about time and space and about the universe and about all these things. And yet the movie about him is so conventional and such a by-the-numbers biopic that it's like, you know, it feels like one of those, I think, you know, it's like biopic Mad Libs, basically.
Right.
Where you just sort of insert the celebrated person and what they're celebrated for and what their personal, you know, obstacles to overcome are, you know, and blah, and the printer spits out a screenplay. So this just, it just feels like one of those. There are some cool ideas, like both of the Hawkings kind of found love elsewhere within the context of the marriage, although they do eventually divorce.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But the movie gives us
so they were swingers.
Yeah. They give us as little as possible of that and then run from it madly, you know. They were what, monogamish, as Dan Savage would say. But yeah, this movie just ultimately
swingers.
It just feels like the fact
it's
that
a
it's
word.
They're fine, they're swingers. It's so standard and so by the numbers that it's all the more frustrating because it's about somebody who was such a who redefined so much, you know. So he deserves a more interesting biopic than
well,
this.
Well, yeah, everyone does.
True. Look, I know. Hey, I'm not totally anti-biopic. I loved this year. I loved Get On Up, you know, and I thought that was an interestingly told story.
Yes.
You know? So yeah, I got nothing against the performances, but the movie itself is a bit of a snooze. So yeah.
How's the tea? It's a British movie.
Consumed with some frequency.
What are the sweaters like? Is there a lot of tweed in this film?
Some, yes. And there are some funny bits.
Sometimes that's enough.
There are some funny bits involving Hawking's voice box when he first gets it.
Yeah.
There's this weird moment where Emily Lloyd. No, sorry, wrong Emily. Emily Watson. There's so many Emilys. There's Watson and Lloyd and Mortimer and, you know.
Dickinson.
Yes. Anyway, Emily...
Slist.
Emily, shut up. Emily Watson turns up briefly as Felicity Jones's mother, and while she's swamped with taking care of Hawking and taking care of the children and all this stuff, does the mother suggest, oh, you should get a nanny or you should get a live-in nurse? No, you should join the church choir.
Yeah.
Which
you
is,
don't have enough to do.
Which is only there so that, because the church choir guy is the one who she sort of winds up having this, you know,
oh,
relationship
yeah.
with.
She becomes a swinger with the church choir.
Exactly, guy. Yes. It's a very movie, but you'll be hearing about it a ton during Oscar season.
Well, you say, maybe.
No. I'm sure he'll get nominated, because not only does he give a good performance, he gives a good performance, you know,
with a disability
and as a famous guy, like all these yes. things that hit all the buttons.
Right.
So, you know.
Right. Right.
Who can resist?
We're done with the... Oh, wait. No.
No.
Why don't you play in Hell? Which I haven't seen
you
yet.
You totally have to see.
Well, we've got the DVD. I'm going to watch it.
You will love it. It is. And it's on demand. So even if it didn't open near you, you can stream this movie.
You can stream it right now.
From all the usual places. It's the latest film from...
Sean Sono.
Who made one of our favorite
movies. Sion? Sion?
I've seen it spelled Sion and Sion. I don't know.
All right.
He directed one of our favorite movies of recent years.
Love Exposure.
Incredible film. Wonderful four-hour Love Exposure.
Yeah.
This one is about, it's kind of a, I called it a Bloody Valentine to independent filmmaking.
Nice.
It's about, he pulls together all these crazy plot threads, which totally makes sense while you're watching it, but trying to explain it after the fact, you sound like you had a fever dream. But it boils down to, we begin with a young girl singing a toothpaste jingle that is sweeping the nation, and her father happens to be Yakuza, and her mother is at home by herself when rival gangsters show up, and the mother kills all of them except one who's severely wounded, mm-hmm. and the mother goes to jail, and the TV, the commercial gets pulled from the air. Meanwhile, there's a group of teenagers who really want to make movies, and they run around filming everything, and they find this kid who's beating up other guys, and they try and turn him into Bruce Lee. Cut to 10 years later, the mother is getting out of prison. The Yakuza father wants the wants it to look like the daughter has managed to have a career in the meantime, so he's trying to put her into a movie. The rival gangster who limped off alive has started his own Yakuza clan, but is still obsessed with the girl. And the teenage filmmakers have never quite accomplished making a movie. The Yakuza people need to get a movie made that night starring the daughter. They manage to find the teenagers to make the movie. And the teenagers shoot the two Yakuza clans going to war and actually killing each other and getting it all on glorious 35mm film. It's super bloody and super energetic and funny and weird and crazy, and you really should see this movie.
I can't wait.
Yeah. You, Dave White, will love it, and I think you...
I like mayhem.
And the Nolly Knife listeners will really enjoy it. It's, you know... if you watch the trailer, it sort of focuses on the filmmaking part, and that's sort of the last act of the movie. But everything leading up to that is fun and crazy, too. And, you know, it's just it's one of those kind of Shaggy Dog stories where you just think, well, how is this all going to come together? What does this have to do with that? And then it just all kind of melds together into this... this nutty thing, and it's, you know what a wuss I am about blood and gore and violence, but it's, this movie, it's so cartoonishly over the top. I mean, like, this is blood the way, like, Stanley Kubrick uses it in The Shining, that it's not even gross, it's just operatic, I don't know. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. I really had a great time. I would not be surprised if this actually winds up on my top 10 list this year, maybe tied with The Raid 2. It's that level of just sort of...
Was that this year?
That was this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
I had forgotten that that was this year.
Is that it? Is that always on?
That's it.
Oh, goodness.
We've just blipped right through this because I haven't interrupted you very much. Not because... I don't want to dominate you, but because it actually hurts to talk right now.
Sorry.
So, my DVD pick of the week is the new Catherine Briot film. It came out just this past week from Strand. It's called Abuse of Weakness, and it stars
Isabelle Huppert
as a woman who is a filmmaker in France. And she casts a man in her new film. I'm going to cough. Please pause it again.
She casts a man.
And he's a criminal. He cons rich people out of their money. And she knows this about him because he sort of famously did it and wrote a book about it. She casts him anyway and takes him into her world. And... he takes over her life. He dominates her entire existence. Now,
it sounds like House of Games.
Adding to this situation is that she has recently had a stroke that she is working her way back from. So she's physically incapacitated to a degree. And even though she is a very sort of demanding, independent, you know, person, she has this crazy vulnerability and allows him to manipulate her completely. And here's the great part. This film is autobiographical. This happened to Catherine Briot, who makes some of the most intense, uncompromising, feminist films.
Yeah.
And this happened to her.
So it's a cross between House of Games and The Tango Lesson.
Yeah. So it's amazing, and Isabelle Huppert is incredible. And it, I don't have to tell you that it doesn't end
happily,
neatly for anyone. Mm-hmm. You should absolutely see this film.
All right.
It's strange and cold, and you leave with more questions than you came in with, because you think to yourself, how could you let this happen to you? And then, but it totally did. Yeah.
My DVD pick this week is a new documentary called I Am Santa Claus, produced by Mick Foley, the professional wrestler.
Yes.
About professional Santa Clauses and who these guys are and where they come from. And it's a fascinating portrait of the iconography of Santa in contemporary America. And just these guys are all so different. I mean, you have your hard partying Santas, and you have your sort of sweet gay Santas, and, you know, a guy who legally changes his name to Santa Claus. There's like internal politics in this group called the Fraternal Order of Real Bearded Santas. You know, because the guy who's their new president apparently like is one of the owners of a swingers club.
Yay!
More swingers for
more
you.
More swingers!
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's got a Morgan Spurlock's presents on it, but I don't think he had anything to do with the actual production of the film. But it's really unusual and interesting and just unpredictable. Like, you don't know what's going to happen next with these guys. They're such an odd mix of folks.
Was the swinger Santa in the lifestyle documentary?
I don't think he himself is a swinger, but he had a brother who died of AIDS who had been like sort of, who the family had kind of rejected, and so he's sort of gone out of his way to sort of defend kind of sexual minorities or something, as he puts it.
Good for him.
Yeah, a lot of really interesting backstories, and, you know, some of the Santas are really, you know, when they're like having the discussion about whether or not this guy should be the president of the group,
right.
You know, this one guy saying that he doesn't think that there should be like gay Santas or atheist Santas, and the other ones are like, well, no.
What's your problem?
Exactly, yeah. So it's just a lot of different things going on, and just how people respond to them in public, you know, at other times of the year. And and then there's a sort of a through line where Mick Foley is kind of becoming more of a Santa because he is one of those people that listens to Christmas music all year round, as it turns out.
Fascinating. There are more of you.
I don't listen to Christmas music all year round.
You would, though.
No.
And I bet you do listen to some of it sometime in the middle of, like, summer, don't you?
Maybe for, like...
Don't you?
Maybe for, like during one car trip, I'll pop some in for a bit, but that's about it.
During what month of the year? Any time of the year.
Any time of the year when I need a fix.
There's a thing that's wrong with you inside. You have a problem.
I'm just an atheist who loves Christmas.
I know you are.
And I won't apologize.
You're the Christmas atheist.
I am. All right. Letters.
Okay, here goes. I'm going to try to read this. I'm going to try to read these letters without harming myself. This is a very long letter that was just sent, and they would like it read this week. And I apologize to those of you who have sent in letters the past couple weeks that haven't been read yet, because you're in the queue, and you will get read. But this one has a time element, because there's an anniversary happening. Dear Alonzo and Ricky Mastooks. New listeners, Ricky Mastooks is a reference to something that happened a very long time ago.
A spoonerism, as it were.
Greetings, this is James from Frisco, Texas. Frisco! Woo!
Frisco, represent.
Want to let you guys know that I'm a huge fan of the show.
Well, all right.
I discovered your podcast through What the Flick
hey.
A few months ago. And even though I don't watch very many movies, I love listening to the podcast. It's the first thing I listen to every Monday when I get to work. I think it's really interesting that people listen to us while they're working. Shouldn't you be working? Like, what do people do for a job?
Some people have jobs that they...
Where you can listen to a podcast and still focus on your work.
Well, not everybody is, you know, typing words at their job.
Some I guess
people
that's
are
true.
Doing other things and they can listen to people talking.
I guess you're right. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, I guess you hadn't.
I don't think about other people's jobs,
no.
Really, ever. I don't understand how the world works. I know there are people out there who do the things that make the world work, but I don't know what those things are, and I don't know how they do those jobs.
Well, thankfully, some of them do it and listen to us at the same time.
I used to listen to all your old episodes until I hit that sad moment a couple weeks ago where I listened to every podcast you have ever recorded.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
That's a whole lot of them.
We're coming up on, what, 200 now or something?
Something like that, yeah. Now I only get 1 to 2 hours of awesomeness a week. Also, being from Frisco, I get giddy anytime you mention Dallas, because I always go, hey, I live near there.
You do indeed.
I love all the bickering, disagreements, jokes, and general hilarity of the show. That also manages to fit in really solid reviews of every movie into the fun. My fiance, Kate, always hears me going on and on about these two funny gentlemen. That's us. Whose movie podcast I love, and if I had planned things out correctly, this will be the first podcast that she listens to while we drive to Little Rock, Arizona. Kate, I apologize.
Arkansas.
Little Rock, Arkansas, sorry. AZ is Arizona.
Yes.
AR is Arkansas.
Yes.
See, I don't know about anything.
Clearly.
Kate, I apologize for not being of proper voice for you this week.
She's never heard you before, so it's all the same to her.
But what if she hates it?
It's like how Capaldi is my first doctor.
What
if
she thinks,
I have no point of reference.
What if she thinks, I don't like how that guy sounds. He sounds like he's got a cold or something.
Well, yeah. There's room for improvement then.
I just interrupted myself in the middle of that sentence. This will be the first podcast that she listens to while we drive to Little Rock, Arkansas to celebrate 3 years of dating.
Huh.
I wanted to be able to point at your bickering and refusal to accept that the other one is right when you disagree and tell her, that is how I hope we will be after being married for 20 years. Well, guess what? You can reach that goal. Because we are coming up on 20 years of knowing each other
mm-hmm.
in a few months.
Yes.
It'll be 20 years that we first knew each other.
And we're a little less than a year away from our 20th anniversary.
Actual 20th anniversary.
Coupledom.
Yeah. Since I consider myself to be more like Dave, and that means you're a good man, with my love of cooking and gory horror movies, I hope this episode didn't start with another story of how he tried to poison Alonso.
Not this time.
As far as unpleasant movie experiences go, since I don't go to the movies a lot, and I don't have very many stories, my most awkward time at the movies was when Kate and I went to what we thought was a drive-in. Double feature of 21 and 22 Jump Street. To our horror, when the first movie started playing, we discovered it was actually The Fault in Our Stars. Although we entertained ourselves by constantly insulting the main guy and wondering who would be the next to die of cancer, it was made awkward when my fiancé's grandmother bawled during the last 45 minutes of the movie. Apparently, it is insensitive to celebrate when you find out that the main guy's cancer is terminal.
Not in the case of this movie.
No, it's not insensitive.
Is there a drive-in in Frisco?
It's the right thing. There must be.
Huh. Yeah. Nice.
Thanks again, guys, for the great podcast. If you can, I would like for you to knife my top 10 lists and my fiance's top 10 lists.
Okay.
Since I did this as a surprise for her, hopefully she enjoys having her top 10 reviewed by two distinguished film experts, considering the fact that when she gave me her list, she told me not to judge. So I'm slightly nervous.
You didn't tell us that, Kate.
Yeah, we don't know you from a can of paint, Kate.
So judge we shall.
So buckle up.
Hopefully if they're on the road to Little Rock, they're already buckled up.
Here's James's top 10.
Okay.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Never seen it. I think one of the few. Well, actually, no.
You gotta pause it again. I'm gonna cough some more.
Actually, as the years pass, there's a lot of Terry Gilliam movies I haven't seen, right. Come to think of it. But yeah, I've not seen that one.
Then we'll just give him that one.
Yes, totally.
The Great Santini.
Oh, excellent.
You know who we need to have on this show sometime?
Lisa Jane Persky.
Yes.
You're right, we should.
Yeah. Because a friend of ours, the delightful Lisa Jane Persky, played the oldest daughter,
mm-hmm.
in The Great Santini. She then stopped acting. Well, I mean, she didn't stop acting right after The Great Santini, she was in
The Sure Thing and other things.
But then later she stopped acting. But now I think she might be getting back into it. Is that what I heard?
She's a very talented photographer.
Yeah,
she has a lot of things going on. Actually, I hooked her up with Jeffrey Schwartz,
She's a jazzy lady.
To be interviewed in the I Am Divine documentary, because she was on stage with Divine back in the day, and so she's part of that documentary.
She's terrific.
Anyway, moving on with this list.
Toy Story 3.
Oh, so good.
Sin City.
The first one's, you know... The second one makes the first one seem a lot better.
I'm not going to give you Sin City.
All right.
It shouldn't be on anybody's top 10 list of anything. You can like it, but it shouldn't be on any kind of top 10 list.
Fair enough. Go on.
The Purge 2, Anarchy. Agreement. Love those Purge movies. The Fighter.
Sure.
Black Dynamite.
Mm.
Which I never saw. Did you?
I have not, but I've heard it's very funny.
We'll give you that one.
Yeah.
Spirited Away.
Oh, yes.
Cabin in the Woods.
Sure.
Which I'm a big fan of. Requiem for a Dream. No.
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 Was that number one?
Yeah, that's number one.
No.
What's your problem, man? Right. Although, you know what I like about Rec Room for a Dream?
The refrigerator?
I like the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
And I like ass to ass.
Oh, well, everybody likes it. Who doesn't?
All right, wait. This list gets weight. Okay. How much?
You're not giving him Sin City.
90 for Sin City?
No, 95. Because I'll let him have Sin City.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You think it should be on the top 10 list?
This is a top 10 list that has The Purge, Anarchy, and, you know, but that's not the point.
All right, 95.
No.
But
and then 85 for Requiem.
Yeah, you got 85. You're 85% knife.
That's a solid
beat. It's fine. I really think we should knock him down even more for having Requiem for a Dream at number one.
No. All right, Kate, what do you got?
All right, Kate, here goes. The Lego Movie.
Okay.
Yeah. The Purge Anarchy!
Well, these two were meant to be.
These two were meant to be together, yeah. The Vow.
Oh, brother.
And in parentheses, it says, Dat Tatum Booty.
Yeah.
Or as you said in your What the Flick review, Dat Ass.
That's right.
Magic Mike. Parentheses, way more of that Tatum Booty. Number 6, 21 Jump Street, parentheses, honestly, I'm surprised every movie isn't just Channing Tatum films. I'm seeing a pattern here.
Mm.
So far, so good, though.
Yeah.
I mean, The Purge 2 is not a good movie, but I had a really great time.
I'm not as big a fan of either the Lego Movie or Magic Mike as you, but I'm not going to count off for them either.
Spirited Away?
Yep.
Black Dynamite, which we got to give you.
Okay, sure.
Beavis and Butthead to America.
Sure.
That's a wonderful, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, God, the last two.
Bring it on.
Number 2 is Remember the Titans. Are you serious? Are you being serious? First of all, your Spirited Away is at number 5. Okay, Spirited Away. Spirited Away at number 5, Kate. We need to talk about Kate.
Clearly.
What is wrong with Kate?
Well, dude put Spirited Away under Requiem for a Dream.
Do you want to know what number one is? Because it gets crazier.
Oh, boy.
I want you to guess what number one is. It stars Cuba Gooding Jr.
Boat Trip?
No.
The Sled Dog movie?
No. But you're getting warmer.
I got nothing.
Radio.
No!
Kate!
No!
Kate!
Uh-uh!
Kate. All right, Kate, here's what's going to happen.
Kate, have you seen Tropic Thunder?
Have you seen Hussard Baltazar, Kate? This is a movie I want you to watch. I want you to watch this movie, Kate. It's about a donkey. It's really good. All right. We don't know Kate. We think she's nice.
I'm sure she's lovely.
She's got to be nice because she's been with this dude for 3 years.
Yes.
Yeah. And any lady that stays with a dude, that's a nice lady. Because dudes are terrible. Like, almost all of them.
Unless she is dominating him, of course.
And if she is, more power to her. All right. You get 10 points off for Radio.
Yeah, no question.
You get 10 points off for Remember the Titans. Both of those movies are bad. Those are bad films. But we're giving you everything else.
All right, that's an 80.
That's your 80% knife, Kate. You're 5% less knife than James.
But you're still passing.
Once again, here's the end of the letter. Once again, thanks for the show. You guys are amazing. I know you've said before, but Alonzo, how can I get a signed copy of your book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas? P.S. Dave, don't change for that 1 3-star review. The best part of the stories told on your show is the constant interrupting to go on tangents. Alonzo, just interrupt Dave more when he tells stories so that it is balanced.
Fine. You don't see the look I get when, you know.
Sincerely, James from Frisco.
Thank you, James from Frisco.
Why don't you tell him and everyone else how they can get
a signed copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. PayPal, $20 to linoleumpodcast, that's one word, at gmail.com.
And you don't just get a signed copy. You get a signed copy, and you get little Christmas surprises
in
the pages of the book, and we gift wrap it like it's a present for you.
So
or whoever you're going to give it to.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you can buy these books for your friends, your family, other people that you don't know, maybe, that you just want to give a book to.
$20
covers... Strangers that you care about.
$20 covers shipping within the United States, and we're happy to send gifts off to other folks on your behalf.
If you don't want any of that stuff, you can just go on Amazon or whatever and get it for about $13.
But if you want
it signed... It retails for what, 17?
16, 17, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you want it signed by the author...
And all the treats that you're going to get.
These
are better treats even than last year. Yeah. Like last year, I put like little vintage stickers in them and stuff like that. But
you've upped the game.
This year, you're going to get better treats year.
So yeah, that's again, PayPal $20 to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Include the shipping address of where you want the book sent and include how you want the book signed and to whom. And we will get it taken care of.
Yes.
You can also PayPal us $20 to get a stunning linoleum knife t-shirt. Just include your shipping address again and the size. We have everything
we're almost out of like larges or something.
Yes,
right?
But we have from small to double X, and it's a black Hanes BVT 100% cotton shirt, and they roll up nicely to make lovely stocking stuffers. You can also...
You'd have to roll it up pretty tightly.
Well, I suppose.
Put it in a stocking.
You can also purchase our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife Extra episodes, where we do in-depth discussion of a movie, which you can watch alongside the movie like a DVD commentary if you want, or just listen to it like a regular episode. So far, we have done White Christmas.
Yes.
The Apple.
Yes.
Two for the Road.
Josie and the Pussycats.
And...
Something else.
And... I can't believe we forgot.
I forget what the other one was. It doesn't matter. Something else. And the one you want right now, because it's that time of the year, it's that most wonderful time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You want the White Christmas one.
Right. And we will very soon be recording Santa Claus.
Yeah. We're going to do another Christmas one because it's Christmas. Yeah. And we're going to do the 1959 Mexican Santa Claus. What was that other one?
I can't remember.
You're scratching your brain over it.
Two for the Road, The Apple, Josie... White Christmas.
No. And something else.
And something else.
Whoever knows, you can email us and tell us what the other one is.
I'm sure I'll know as soon as I turn this off, but I can't believe we've forgotten.
I believe that we have forgotten.
We spent time researching it, and we recorded the thing.
Doesn't matter.
Whew. Anyway. All right. So, I want to remind everybody, of course, that you can subscribe to this show for free on iTunes.
Yes.
And if you want to leave us a review, that helps us get... more listeners and better placement on iTunes. I want to thank Bobster427 and SunDodger1 for both leaving us... Oops. My phone. for leaving us very nice reviews on the site. We appreciate that. Check out our friends online, ChristyLemire.com, in the podcast universe, of course, the Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know, the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, the Brett Easton Ellis podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. As always, we thank Blue for our awesome theme music, and you can find out more about his amazing stuff at Blutopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. CIA. You can stream this show for free at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or via the app on our Facebook page. And if you have not already liked our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, please do. You can follow the show on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check in at TVTag.com. And again, our email address is LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't already liked the page for my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, now would be a great time to do that, actually. And if you have read the book and enjoyed the book and have not already left a review on Amazon.com, please do. Because, again, it's another one of those things. There's an algorithm involved where the more positive reviews you have, the better you show up on lists and things.
Every one of you is our street team.
That's right. We really appreciate everybody talking up the show and sharing the show with friends. That's how it gets out there.
Forcing your fiance to listen.
On long car trips. All that stuff works. It all
making her question the relationship.
The validity of your love. Yeah. It's all part of how we get out there and how this show has grown an astonishing amount in 4 years or so.
Apparently not big enough for the professional lady who wants to help us with ads. Like, we need to be bigger, apparently, to get ads.
She says we're at least about the starter level.
We're at the starter level now? Yeah. But by our standards...
Yeah, we've skyrocketed.
We're like the Iron Giant now.
We started with nothing.
We're like the five-story fake King Kong from the 70s remake. Or however tall that thing was. 40 feet tall? That's not five stories.
I don't know.
Yeah, we've gone from like 6 listeners to like 106. A lot of people.
Well, not to be braggy, but we have...
No, be braggy. Do it.
Okay, fine. We're in the 4 digits of listeners per episode.
It's very exciting, and we are fixing to have our 300,000th...
Download. That's true. Yeah, we've already...
That's almost a third of the way to 1 million of
them. Yeah, we've already passed a quarter of a million total downloads, which is nutty. And we have some really exciting guests coming up in the coming weeks, by the way. Producer,
are you going to say their names?
Yeah, why not?
Do you want it to be a surprise?
I want to generate excitement.
Are they going to be excited?
I want buzz to build. All right, fine, I won't say.
Make it a surprise.
We have cool guests coming up.
Christmas surprises.
In the coming weeks, so you do not want to miss that. This has been lovely. And if you're a new listener, thanks for joining us. We hope you come back. And if you are one of our regulars, we appreciate your ongoing support. And we will catch you next time.
Everything hurts. Goodbye.